It is KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall, your host, as always, for the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent, Poodle Radio. And that was the first of the cuts you'll hear this time, as always, corralled by Poodle Radio music producer, as well as independent associate arts editor, Alec Gummingor. It was from, let me get this absolutely correct, Future Islands. That's Follow You. They're playing Muddy Waters on Sunday, May 23rd. We have a political show today because there's political stuff going on in Santa Barbara. I'm joined by independent reporter Chris Marr, and I want to make sure I have him fully put up on the mixing board here. How's it going, Chris? Oh, almost. Now, there may be an issue here with what's with the control board, so I'm going to mess with this a little bit, and perhaps we can get you fully coming through the air. So we're going to hear one more track. This is from Kyle Nicoletis. It's Hummingbird on Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.
Outside my window, little hummingbird flies. And that's how I know your spirit's alive. But as I approach you, you fly away. I'm not a big mean blackbird like you say. And take me down to where I've been. I will fly into the night. We will find, we'll find our love again. Outside my turns dark, the raindrops fly. I call out you and hear my voice echo back in return. In search of truth, I quickly find concern. Take me down to where I've been, 'cause I will fly into the night. Outside my window, little hummingbird dies. I hold its body, the tears drop from my eyes. Oh, where could you be? Oh, where could you be, my love? I'm growing out so lonely every day. Take me down to where I've been, 'cause I will fly into the night.
And we're back on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. It's Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. There from Kyle Nicoletis is Hummingbird. He's going to be playing a Soho on Thursday, May 6th. I'm joined now in the studio, not across the glass, by indie reporter Chris Marr. Chris, you can be heard now.
All right, great.
Excellent. There we go. So it's going to be a political show today because you are sort of deep in the coverage of the current politics going on in Santa Barbara. What are the stories you are most on right now as far as elections, that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, the primary elections in California are scheduled for June 8th. Absentee ballots go out this Monday, so we're kicking it into high gear here. In Santa Barbara County, there's a couple big ones. Most notably, the race for district attorney. It's a countywide election. Two candidates squaring off in that one. They both work inside the DA's office, Joshua Lynn and Joyce Dudley. Down in Carpinteria, there's a Measure J on the ballot, which is an initiative for Peridon to build an oil facility onshore but to dig for oil offshore. And then in the second district of the county, Janet Wolf, who was elected for the first time in 2006, is facing Dan Secord, opposition from her opponent in 2006. And he's a former city council member who's given it another shot.
Excellent. So we have those three things going on. For this first segment, let's take a focus on the most dramatic race, the DA's race.
Sure.
So what's the situation here? What would be the DA's race for dummies, I guess you could give? Let's say someone is only vaguely aware of Santa Barbara politics. What do you tell them about this DA's race?
Yeah, well, it's not an easy one to dissect. You know, like I was telling you earlier, everybody is against crime.
That's a very
standard.
Safe 100% against crime policy. There's no like, well, some crime is okay.
Exactly.
But, right. How do they distinguish themselves then to the public?
Yeah, well, it's been a very interesting race, kind of all stemming from DA Christy Stanley, who was elected in 2006 to her first term. She became ill with lung cancer not long into her term, and a lot of people felt like leadership was lacking because of that. You know, they'd say they didn't see her in the office a lot. She wasn't around when big decisions were made, and the county district attorney's office kind of lacked a leader at the top. And that's kind of when Joyce Dudley decided to step in. You know, she said she was encouraged by some to run, and she was going to square off against Christy Stanley. Christy, you know, became more and more ill. She actually passed away just a couple weeks ago after battling this lung cancer. But she eventually decided not to run for re-election and endorsed Josh Lynn. So it kind of all stemmed from Christy Stanley's sickness and these two sides that formed because of the leadership in the office.
And so in terms of the actual voters, the public, I guess what I would ask first is how are people deciding who they're siding with as far as votes? Because it does, the way you describe it, it seems like an internal battle, essentially.
No, that's very true. It is an internal battle that probably affects the actual office, you know, running more than anything. It's hard to differentiate a lot of the issues or a lot of the stances on the issues. You know, they're similar in their stances to the death penalty or to charging youth as adults, for example. They both say, you know, only in the most serious circumstances should we seek the death penalty, and only in special circumstances should we charge children as adults. And so it's stuff like that that makes it tough. Kind of underlying everything is the budget. The county itself is dealing with a $40 million deficit, and, you know, that extends down to the DA's office. Josh Lynn cites his experience as the chief trial deputy. He's been in the administration of the office for the last 18 or 19 months, whereas Joyce has been a prosecutor her whole time in the office, but cites her experience as a executive director of Head Start, where she dealt with a budget, and oversaw 100 or so people. And so I think the budget and the administrative experience is a big factor in this race as well.
So it's less about positions than about, check it out, I've had relevant experience to the kind of problems we have in Santa Barbara right now?
Well, I think that, you know, there are differences in the way that, small differences in the way that they would deal with crime, but, you know, these two people aren't going to be in the courtrooms prosecuting criminals. They're going to be running a department. And so while you need aggressive prosecutors with experience and knowledge of the law and ability to make those decisions, you also need administrative, you know, experience and knowledge and understanding. So it's kind of a really important race. It's probably the most important elected official in the county, the district attorney. I mean, the sheriff, you know, can arrest people. He can put them in jail. But unless the district attorney decides to actually charge these people with crimes, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you're arrested if you're never charged with a crime.
Right, right. And you think of Santa Barbara, or I guess one thinks of Santa Barbara as not being a very crimey sort of place. I know it probably seems different to you because you're constantly covering crime mm-hmm. and these just surrounding it. But what, and we asked this, I asked you a similar question about the lack of violent crime here, but it sort of doesn't resonate in the mind as a crime kind of place in general. Does that affect the way that these kinds of races, these kind of debates are framed?
Well, I think, you know, the last couple of years, gang violence has kind of risen to the forefront of the community discussion. There's been some, you know, big instances of gang crime, murder, even in very public places. And so, like I was saying to you last week, you know, that gets people's attention. And you know, like you were saying, everybody thinks of Santa Barbara as just this, you know, beautiful beachside community,
idyllic paradise.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, so when there is crime, you know, it kind of shocks people a little, and they think that the world is crumbling, that crime is running rampant, that the police aren't doing their job, that people aren't getting prosecuted, and so they look to this race as a very important one in terms of being able to put these criminals away.
Right. Now, in the coverage of this, what have you found most interesting to focus on? Because, of course, you've had to learn pretty much everything about it, reporting on it. What is particularly fascinating to you from a repertorial standpoint with this race, this DA's race?
Well, I don't know if it's fascinating necessarily, but the two sides, you know, there's two very distinct sides, and it's two sides of people who don't like each other very much. You know, there's one group of supporters of Joyce Dudley who, you know, just really think that Josh is not ready to be district attorney, who, you know, might have anger management issues.
Really?
Who, yeah. And on the other side, there's people who, you know, are supporting Josh, who look at Joyce Dudley and question her ethics in the courtroom on a couple cases, and question her sincerity in her campaign. And so there's just every day almost I get a phone call from one side or the other, just with you know, a story or you know, some interaction that they had with one person or the other that has always stuck with them, or they see it as a repeating, you know, habit, and it just scares them. And so it's almost to a certain extent, and I think they both are, you know, have very good qualifications to some extent, but to another extent, it's almost like it's a lesser of two evils kind of thing. Not saying either of them are evil, but you know, kind of the one you dislike less.
Right, the least worst option, as they often call it
yeah,
in politics.
Exactly.
I'd forgotten how all politics ends up getting a little bit personal when you're trying to frame candidates, but especially in a town of this small scale, where you see, I mean, I see political figures or government figures on the street every day, essentially, in Santa Barbara. So you probably get these people who email you, they're probably often not even higher ups in any sense. They're just people who happen to have information or think they do that's going to bias it one way or the other.
A lot of people inside the office and a lot of people in the law community, in the, you know, defense attorneys or you know, people along those lines. Everybody has an opinion.
Now, this third element, the passing of Christy Stanley, I'm not quite sure how to put this, but is her endorsement of Josh, is there an element where people are in some sense voting for her, like voting after her recommendation because they liked her when she was in office?
Or well, I think that her endorsement along the thing about the district attorney's office is it's had stable leadership for decades. You know, there hasn't been a contested race, you know, a real contested race probably since the 70s, maybe even earlier. And certainly nothing as kind of nasty as this race has been in a very long time. So, and a lot of that leadership was under Tom Snedden, who was the top of the office for over two decades, you know, and everybody thought that it would continue under Christie, and, you know, tragically, she got sick and was never able to fulfill her kind of vision for the office. Josh has the endorsement of Tom Snedden, Christy Stanley, Eric Hansen, and Pat McKinley, who were assistant DAs, and then Gene Martinez, who also was an assistant district attorney. So all these administrators have kind of backed Josh. The significance of that is hard to quantify, especially right now. But, you know, these are a group of people who, with something like 175 years of prosecutorial experience. You know, they hired both Josh and Joyce.
Right.
And so there's something to be said for that. But, you know, at the same time, Sheriff Bill Brown's endorsing Joyce. The Police Officers Association is endorsing Joyce. And people from the right and left are endorsing Joyce. So the endorsements,
it's pretty entangled about who's endorsing who. There's not a clear pattern, it seems.
Exactly.
Like.
And even in the office, you know, I think Josh has the support of nine or so deputy district attorneys, where Joyce is at four, I think, technically, but then also has the support of three or four people who just retired. So there's a split there, which, and, you know, everybody has something to say on the issue.
That's definitely true. If you've just tuned in, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. I'm here with Independent reporter Chris Marr talking about the DA's race. Got some other measures and races to discuss as well. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, of course, the show is live. You can give us a call at 805-893-2424. Once again, that phone number is 805-893-2424, because everyone has an opinion. We're now going to take it back to the music with a track from a band you'll probably know, Vampire Weekend, scheduled to play Extravaganza at UCSB's Harder Stadium on Saturday, May 15th. Here is a cut called Kids Don't Stand a Chance. It is, of course, the Chromeo remix.
Sleep to enhance. Inside. what's to your most defense? It's been strap man a morning, the partners in the dance. The paper's shot to pieces, the kiss don't stand a chance.
Presented by the Israeli-Palestinian Film Club in conjunction with Associated Students and Israel on Campus Coalition and supported by the Middle Eastern Resource Center, the film series begins with a screening of Ajami in the Multicultural Center Lounge on the UCSB campus on Thursday, April 29th at 8 p.m. The film combines several stories that come from a religiously mixed community of Muslims and Christians in Tel Aviv. For more information, including how to participate in the film series, visit the Israeli-Palestinian Film Festival Facebook webpage. On Saturday, May 8th, the Santa Barbara Blues Society presents its first Zydeco show in many years. Dickie Doo and the Zydeco crew, direct from Louisiana. The show is at Warren Hall at the Earl Warren Showgrounds in Santa Barbara. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. and music starts at 8:30. For more information, call 805-722-8155 or visit www.sbblues.org. KCSB 91.9 FM is a media supporter of the Santa Barbara Blues Society.
It is KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. That cut, one of the several handpicked by Poodle Radio music producer and associate arts editor Alec Umingore, was Nautilus Teeth from Twig Palace playing the Biko Co-op Garage on Wednesday, May 5th. I'm here once again with indie reporter Chris Marr talking politics this time because there's a few races going on and they're important to talk about. We talked about the DA's race, but now we're going to move on to the 2nd District race. And I'm looking at a map of the 2nd District right now because I realize that, you know, it's not everybody has their eye super close on local politics, and it may not be clear what the 2nd District is, but we've got it open here. And Chris, it's huge.
Yeah.
How would you describe the borders of the 2nd District?
Well, it encompasses a lot of Goleta, or Noleta, part of Santa Barbara, including the beachfront area, and then kind of the upper parts of Santa Barbara.
What do you think that cuts off? Mission Street, maybe?
Yeah, it's hard to tell from here, but yeah, it's somewhere around there. I live at Mission and De La Vina. I'm pretty sure I'm in the 2nd District.
Okay.
I live just up above Mission. So
I live on Carrillo and Laguna. I'm definitely out of it.
Yeah, I think that's about where it starts. And, you know, Hope Ranch and those areas are all in the 2nd District as well.
Oh, okay. Cool. Now, we have our district here. We have this huge thing. And tell us about what are the basics of this race? Who is it running? What's the story?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a repeat of 2006. At the time, Janet Wolf and Dan Secord were the two top finishers in a primary that featured four people. So they faced off in the November election. They were running to replace Susan Rose, who spent a couple terms as supervisor. Janet Wolf came as a businesswoman who had spent 11 years on the Goleta School Board. Dan Secord is a doctor. He, you know, has delivered something like 50,000 babies or something. Half of Santa Barbara.
I mean, not that that's qualification necessarily for the office, but that's impressive.
Exactly. And he also spent time on 8 years on the Santa Barbara City Council and on the California Coastal Commission and that sort of thing. Janet Wolf defeated Dan in November in a pretty close race, but a pretty decent sized victory as well. So
we have a rematch, essentially.
Yeah, essentially a
this
rematch.
Time it's personal.
Janet, you know, always I think was planning on running for reelection, and you know, made that official. For the longest time, you know, there are rumors of people running against her, but she's a very strong candidate and with a lot of backing and support and had a strong first term. And so there were kind of, you know, I think her crew was hopeful that she would scoot through unopposed. But the week that signing up as a candidate ended, Dan Secord threw his hat in the race. So jumped in there
last
at the
minute.
End. Yeah.
And so I want to ask what kind of challenges Dan Secord faced. Obviously he faces a large one in that we have an incumbent who is widely seen as a very strong candidate who beat him before.
Mm-hmm.
What specifically, I guess, do you think is his task here? Obviously to win the election, but
right.
Like what are the challenges presented specifically by this race?
Well, His main goal, his main focus is the county budget. He made it plainly obvious when news came out that he was going to be running. He's made it obvious in a couple debates. He's made it obvious in fundraising letters that his one main issue is finance.
He's run kind of a single issue campaign then?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. He thinks that he has the knowledge and experience and history to make a difference, to step in where he believes Janet Wolf has kind of dropped the ball. No one can deny that, you know, these have been some of the worst economic times in our state's history and our county's history. And he sees himself as kind of a champion of that cause, and being able to establish some steps and procedures to kind of fix, you know, what's broken, I guess, and try right. to get the county righted.
How much is that separable, though, in a campaign, do you think, from the general sort of economic malaise that goes on in the world, you know, in the country yeah. especially? It's a bold move to try to say that it's worse off in one specific part when it's kind of bad all over, right?
Well, that's kind of the interesting thing. You know, I sat in on one of the debates that they've had. I think it's the only public debate they've had, but, you know, he's trying to blame the county's problems on Janet Wolfe, you know, who's one of five board members. And so, I mean, it's an interesting strategy. He's got to show that he, you know, is going to come in there and do something different than she is, that he really is a better fiscal manager than she is. And hope it holds. I mean, she's been strong in a lot of other issues, you know, environmental concerns, and which is, you know, kind of the other big thing that people care about. And so she's a tough incumbent, but,
right.
You know, Dan just really sees his financial background as able to, step in and improve things.
So he is treating it as a one issue race, but it sounds like this is a district. It looks like one where there's more than one issue at hand. You also mentioned the environment. What else can a candidate go on in a race in this district? Finance, the environment. What else is a playable issue?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's always issues facing the county board of supervisors. There's zoning issues, agricultural issues, which, you know, oftentimes fall under the environment. You know, Goleta is expanding and growing a lot. Coming up in after the census is completed will be redistricting, which, you know, is a very big deal actually in this race. Dan is more conservative. Janet is a Democrat. For all intents and purposes, this is a nonpartisan seat, but
right.
you know, there's clearly two alignments here. And if Dan is able to pull this off, you know, the more conservative group will have a majority back with our North County supervisors, and that could mean bad things for kind of the progressive Democrats in terms of redistricting and redrawing the lines. And it would be, excuse me, it would be really bad for Doreen Farr in the 3rd District, because her district is the one that will probably see the most movement in terms of redrawing the lines. So
right. So there's a balance then. There's a political balance that's easily disturbed as far as the composition of maybe less parties than ideologies.
Sure.
I see. And then this second district race could do some upsetting of that balance.
Exactly.
Can we put it that way?
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. The third district is kind of the one that's always fought over. It's always kind of seen as the swing seat. You know, sometimes
right.
it's more conservative, you know, Brooks Firestone type character from North County, and sometimes it's a more progressive person like Doreen Farr. But you know, the chance to redraw the lines only happens every 10 years, and so this election is a big one in terms of you know, Doreen Farr being able to keep her seat, because there will be a lot of redrawing going on if Janet loses.
If you've just tuned in, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name's Colin Marshall. I'm joined here by indie reporter Chris Marr, talking about a couple different elections. Earlier, we talked about the DA's race, now the second district race. And if you have any questions, of course, you can give us a call or comments or whatever at 805-893-2424, or you can send an email on to me, actually. I'll introduce this feature to the show on the fly. I'm at Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at independent.com. independent.com. That is Colin at independent.com. So you can send something there. I will receive it on the air. And, you know, maybe it'll be an issue we can address. For now, though, we are going to move on temporarily to some musical issues. Another track from an artist soon to visit Santa Barbara. This cut is going to come from Verna Beware. This is Portugal and Galicia on Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.
Fire, making your rocks, cracking. On Thursday, May 13th at 8 p.m., Santa Barbara New Music Series presents Vinnie Golia's Friday Night Band live at Muddy Waters Cafe in Santa Barbara. The Los Angeles-based electric funk free jazz band will be joined by local Gypsy Math rockers Oso. Muddy Waters Cafe is located at 508 East Haley Street in Santa Barbara. For more information, visit www.coulterfraser.com/SBNewMusicSeries. Once again, that's Vinnie Golia's Friday Night Band live at Muddy Waters Cafe on Thursday, May 13th at 8 p.m. On Thursday, May 6th at 7 p.m., Santa Barbara Contemporary Arts Forum's monthly Forum Lounge series continues with Luz y Sombra, an electro-bilingual opera by YNS. Yahaira Yvonne Cardoza and Oscar Miguel Santos use video projections, original music, and live performance in Luz y Sombra, Light and Shadow, an exploration of love, loss, and gender identity. Luz y Sombra will be performed in English and Spanish. YNS is a collaborative multimedia project consisting of Yahaira Yvonne Cardoza and Oscar Miguel Santos. For more information, visit the Santa Barbara Contemporary Arts Forum website at www.sbcaf.org.
It's KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. It's the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent Poodle Radio. And before those PSAs, we heard a cut from Portugal. And Portugal and Galicia was the title. The artist was Verna Beware. You can see I have just an excellent grasp of music. They play Velvet Jones on Thursday, May 13th. We've had a bit of a political show today. I'm here with Chris Marr, indie reporter. And I wanted to ask you, Chris, the nature of reporting on Santa Barbara politics, what would you tell the audience about it, about just the endeavor and what it's specific, like what are the unique challenges of politics here in a town like this and getting a handle on them and communicating them?
Well, it's always exciting. It's a pretty small town, but there's a lot going on. There's a lot of different elements. There's a few different jurisdictions, in Goleta and Carpinteria all dealing with offshore oil drilling and development. You have North County ag land concerns. You have development in Goleta. You have, you have increasing crime, or at least the appearance of an increase in crime, whether it's
right
fact or not.
But the appearance itself is sort of that's an issue already.
Yeah, exactly. And so, that goes beyond just the district attorney's office or the sheriff, but people hold public officials accountable for that sort of stuff and appropriating funding to eliminate that sort of stuff. And so there's a whole lot of issues that, aren't necessarily unique to our area, but there are some that are unique to our area. And all of that kind of going on at the same time as budget concerns, and then you have the two groups. In the county, you have kind of the conservative North County crew, and then a lot of more progressive South County residents, especially in the city. Just kind of the nationwide trends of incumbents facing challenges by Republicans. And so that all plays into, what we've been talking about in terms of the upcoming elections as well.
And no matter what, it's kind of guaranteed to keep your job interesting, right?
That's right. Elections are cyclical. So every year or two, come June and November, things pick up.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to join us this morning on Poodle Radio.
Yeah, no, glad to be here.
Once again, you've been listening to Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name is Colin Marshall. I host the show. Our music is organized by Associate Arts Editor and Poodle Radio music producer Ali Cummingore. And of course, without the help of Senior Indie Editor Matt Kettman, the show would not be nearly as organized. So thank you for tuning in. We will catch you next Tuesday, or the Tuesday following this one, we're not skipping a week, at 8 a.m. as usual. Here's 30 Seconds to Mars. They are scheduled to play Santa Barbara. They're playing the Bowl on May 14th. It's Kings and Queens, closing out our show.
desperate and broken. The sound of a fight. Father has